We got a great show in store for you, everybody. We got a special guest in the building right now. No topics are safe from comments from the Peanut Gallery. I'm your host, Jordan Kurtz. We have former All-American quarterback down at CSU Pueblo, Mr. Ross Dowson. How you doing tonight, Ross?
I'm great, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you on. So, you know, it's been a little bit since you've been, you know, in the public light when you were a standout down there for Coach Riston and the Thunder Wolves. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what's your story? Where you been, man?
I've been around. It's been a while since my time down in Pueblo. I finished up down there, and I had a tryout in Tennessee. Things didn't go my way. Had another shoulder surgery. Went back to San Antonio. Went to school. Okay. Finished out grad school, got my MBA, and moved back up here to Colorado after another round of school. And I actually was a tennis coach for a little bit of time, too.
Oh, okay. Very nice. And, you know, just for the record, when you say Tennessee, you're referring to the Tennessee Titans, correct?
Yes, sir. That would be correct.
Just to strike that for the people out there listening who aren't familiar with your background on that side, just so we can establish that a little bit there. And so you're back in Denver now. That's correct?
I am.
Awesome, man. You know, you've seen a lot of change with the sports climate since you've made the transition to Colorado. We've won a Super Bowl here in that meantime. What do you think of how everything in the Denver scene is? You know, you've had the opportunity to go to some different sporting events, Avalanche, Nuggets, all of that. What do you think the Denver sports scene is like coming from a place like Texas?
I think it's an exciting time to be in Denver, honestly. I think that goes without saying, but the Broncos, man, they look like they're going to be close if they can get a signal caller going next year. You know, Vaughn's leading the defense, and they're always going to be tough, but if they can find someone that knows how to throw a football and put them under center, then I think they'll be pretty good.
That's definitely, you know, that's one major thing that they need, among many other. You know, I still attest to the notion that they need to shore up the trenches more than anything. I feel like, you know, they could have Tom Brady of his prime. They could have Dan Marino, John Elway, Peyton Manning, Steve Young, Joe Montana, the who's who of quarterbacks in history. If you have a Swiss cheese offensive line that's letting the guy get hit all the time, I just give you the exact example of an Andrew Luck out there in Indianapolis. You know, you spent that high draft pick. You gave a lot up to be able to put yourself in that position to have him, but you didn't put yourself in a position to protect your investment. And that being said, you know, Andrew Luck hasn't played football in a very long time, and there's no guaranteed timetable on when to see him on the field. You know, he's gone through his fair share of injuries because he has been hit so much. If we can't shore up that offensive line, you know, I think that we're a lost cause with whoever we put under center.
No, you're actually 100% right about that. I just I'm a little bit partial to those that play quarterback. That's the first thing I notice, I guess.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and you know that's totally understandable there. I think that there's some decent options that are out there for quarterbacks that are out there within the draft as well as free agency. There's definitely, we'll have a lot more to come with that. We had a great discussion going on before we went ahead and hit the record button. We wanted to make sure that we didn't go away with too much before we actually got on air. So, you know, with that being said, we'll kind of dig into the nuts and bolts right away. We're coming right off of the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts there? I know that you're a Patriots fan and you like Tom Brady, so you know I'm gonna give you a pass on that one for making the trip all the way up here tonight. But you know that's just one of those things there.
Yeah, thanks for calling me out, man. I was trying to keep that undercover. I know I'm in enemy territory out here.
Well, you know, I have to call him as I see him. You know, I have kind of a known thing with some of the Patriots fans that I work with on a regular basis. Jamie, don't transfer me, please.
Jamie, I like your style.
Yeah, he's from Massachusetts himself. He's a diehard Patriots fan. I kind of razzed him about it a little bit. He's a big boss of mine, and he said, "How's a transfer sound?" And I told him I'll back off at that point.
Nice, nice. No, I think it was a great game. And even being a Patriots fan, I really wasn't too upset walking away from the TV at the end of the night because it was just exciting football. It was good stuff. And again, that's with my bias as an offensive player, but I love to see the scoreboard light up. And actually, Nick Foles is from Austin, Texas, and I watched him play a little bit of football in high school, and it was good to see him have his career come back around and have some good things happen to him.
That's awesome. You know, I mean, I've definitely became in the last few weeks right here, the people of Philly, you know, they coined the phrase, but Big Dick Nick, he balled out, man.
He did, no doubt. And I don't know if you saw the video clip of him in the Super Bowl. He called his own shot there on that fourth down play where he caught the pass.
He did. And, you know, what's even crazier about it is there was some video that I saw that was released today of him in pregame warming up, practicing that play. You didn't really think, you know, probably just by watching it from him doing it, that he was probably, you know, just messing around, catching a ball, whatever out there. But if you watch it, you see, you know, exactly the route that he ran out there in warmups. It's nearly identical to what you saw him run there in the game. So it's not like this was something that was brand new or that he didn't even practice. Maybe your boy Tom should have been out there practicing because he had butter fingers right there.
That was one of those plays where you just shake your head and you can't really defend it. It was just a bad drop, honestly.
Yeah, that's one of those where, you know, it was kind of one of those moments. If he catches that's a momentum swinger right there. But, you know, just the way that it went, nothing pleases me more as a football fan than to see Tom Brady sitting there with his crying face, whining like a little baby. That's just me and my bias. But I'll ride with that one as a Broncos fan, personally.
Right, of course. I will say, he's not pretty to watch when he leaves the pocket.
You know, Tom Brady in general, this is just my take with him on that sense. I like to see him lose, I'll be honest. Tom Brady is not a guy that's easy to like. Tom Brady is a guy who walks around with a $100 haircut and skinny jeans and a pair of Uggs. His, you know, his wife is the breadwinner of the family, and she makes double what he has in his net worth. You know, he comes into the Super Bowl in an outfit. The meme that went viral all across the board was that he looked like a woman who just won custody of her kids. Not too far off, mouth-kissing son of a bitch. Did you see him the way that he was all over his kid? That was awful. I was sick to my stomach watching that. I sat there and was like, what is going on? And then you hear the voice in the background. Nothing comes without a cost. When this kid starts walking around in a trench coat and dressing in goth, you know why. Jesus Christ.
Like I said, man, I know that's one of those things that, you know, you can't really defend it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if Giselle's my wife, I'll gladly let her be the breadwinner.
I mean, I guess that's the TB12 way. We'll just let that one sit there. But, you know, kind of reeling it back in with the Super Bowl, one guy that really stood out to me, and, you know, they had the victory parade today out there in Philadelphia. He was out there dressed like Aladdin on acid, but Jason Kelce put on an absolute clinic during the Super Bowl. He had guys on skates all day long. He was, you know, he was chipping off guys, climbing to the next level, sealing blocks off. He was a big part of some of those big plays, especially the LeGarrette Blount touchdown early on. His block was was, in my opinion, what sprung that touchdown. So he really kind of stood out to me. He doesn't get anywhere near as much publicity or, you know, credit in the media or acknowledgement just based off of, you know, who his brother is, being that his brother is the Kansas City Chiefs standout tight end Travis Kelce. But, you know, he's been a very big player his entire career. He was a big standout at Cincinnati. He was roommates with our very own Derek Wolfe with the Denver Broncos. So he's had his fair share of big time moments with a lot of big time guys. He's just finally getting that nod. And if you haven't had the chance to listen to his victory parade speech today, I definitely encourage you to take a look at that. Because if you want to see a guy who maybe has a WWE future, sounding almost like Paul Heyman himself out there announcing, if you love the Philadelphia Eagles, give me a hell yeah. That's 5 minutes of him going up and down the roster, calling people out up and down the way that the media wanted to blast them, saying that, oh, this guy was too small. This guy didn't fit the scheme. He went up and down, top to bottom, called everybody out. It was fantastic. I absolutely loved it.
It was awesome to see him have some success, man. You know, it's like you said, he's kind of, you know, gotten no publicity because of who his brother is, and he's an offensive lineman too, but he did have a hell of a game, and it was cool to see him pave the way for LeGarrette on that touchdown, and again, I was happy for LeGarrette. It was cool to see him in there, you know, giving it back to the Patriots after they didn't want to re-sign him.
Absolutely, you know, and then kind of to, it wasn't because of this reason, you know, Chris Long all along didn't have the intention of re-signing with the Patriots because he just felt like, you know, he could fulfill a bigger role elsewhere. He was grateful for his time last year and getting his ring with the Patriots, but I'm a huge Chris Long fan. You know, he's a very big social advocate. He donated his entire salary this year to philanthropy causes. I'm a big fan of him. Like I say, this is now his second ring. I think that that definitely is, you know, enhancing some of his future credentials. I don't want to start putting that gold jacket behind him just yet because I don't know where he stacks up all-time numbers-wise. But two different teams, two rings, he's in the prime of his career. He's a guy that has that's had a lot of big impacts. I don't know. He's a guy that's definitely going to be noted for a long time. But it was great to see him have another year of success.
Well, he's also a guy who's going to be noted for having a badass costume today. He went with a little Ric Flair fur coat.
That he did. You know, I mean, I was ready to start seeing the limousine flying, or limousine riding, jet flying, you know. I didn't see if he had him on, but I can guarantee if those gaiters were on, they were going to be hard to keep down.
Oh, yeah, but he kind of speaks to the whole story of the Eagles this year, why they're kind of a fun team to watch. They had a lot of guys that were active with, like Chris Long, for social activism and mm-hmm. Social justice. And, I mean, you know,
Malcolm Jenkins?
Yeah, Malcolm Jenkins was one as well. And like they said, they were kind of, they felt like an underdog team, and they were an underdog team as the number one seed the entire playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think those kind of things coming together made them an exciting team, and why a lot of people were, it was easy to pull for them.
I would definitely agree. And, you know, I think that a parallel that people can draw from the situation coming into this Super Bowl for this Eagles team was to the Giants of yesteryear, when Phil Simms, your franchise quarterback, gets hurt. A couple weeks left in the regular season, you ride out the entire playoffs based off of your defense and your system that was able to, you know, get you through with a backup quarterback, and you go on to win the Super Bowl. So that, you know, that's a very, very close comparison in my eyes in terms of, you know, system correlations or the way that they were just looking at, you know, the situation itself. Crazy thing is, with that particular example, the defensive coordinator of that championship team for the New York Giants was one Bill Belichick, under the tutelage of the head coaching of Bill Parcells.
That's right. I forget that.
So it's crazy. You know, the hoodie, that was one of the hoodie's seven rings during that season. What do you think? Do you think he's back this next year? I don't know. I think there's a good chance that he might be out, especially with old Josh McDaniels pulling the snake move on the Colts yesterday.
Yeah, I know Josh McDaniels is another hot name here in Denver. But, you know, even as a Patriots fan, I got to be honest, I'm not really high on Bill Belichick right now. Personally, I think whether he realizes it or not, and I'm sure he does, he sabotaged their chances in that Super Bowl by not playing Malcolm Butler. So whether, you know, he'll retire, when he retires, I don't know. I don't think it'll be this year, but when he does, he'll definitely go down as the greatest still. But he's lost a lot of trust, I guess, in my book.
I would say, you know, yes and no, depending on what the true story of what really went on with Malcolm Butler was, because I've heard a lot of, I've heard a lot of reports from people that are, you know, supposedly qualified sources that are stating that he potentially was at a concert or was out, you know, and about with a club. Rick Ross may or not have been involved. Rick Ross has also been very, you know, very well known to be tied to the Patriots organization. He was even seen on TV this week celebrating and hanging out with Robert Kraft himself. They said that he was, you know, that he either had weed on him in his hotel room when they went to do bed check, or he definitely reeked very much so of it and appeared to be high. He also was said to have broken curfew based off of the events. So this is my take on where it might have been coming from Bill Belichick, just because as much as I absolutely hate and cannot stand the Patriots, and I'm not necessarily a Belichick fan, but I respect the hell out of him just because the dude has been the example of what a coach is or what a coach can do for an organization. I don't foresee that he intentionally sabotaged that for no reason. I think that from some of the reports that were stated, that Malcolm Butler also had an emotional breakdown with the coaches upon being confronted about the issue. Who knows how much animosity and how much steam that he let off based off of the Stephen Gilmore issue. I know that that was something that throughout the year was reported on, that it was having a strong mental effect on him, that he didn't get that big contract and they offered that to somebody out of house, especially given what he felt was something deserved, being that he was the hero for their victory in the Super Bowl against the Seahawks. If it was to that level or something to that effect, I could understand the decision. And I could almost even go as far as to say that I understand why he did it in the way that he did. If he would have made some sort of announcement prior to the point in which he did, then you have some sort of distraction. You have possible division within the locker room and animosity built up because of that. You have a Barrett Robbins type of situation from years and years ago when the Raiders made the Super Bowl against the Buccaneers. You have situations like that that create a distraction away from the team versus right away, right before the game, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to roll this way. You have no chance for anything but a knee-jerk reaction. You don't let guys have a chance to overanalyze what's going on. You just let them get into the game and react. Did it probably massively impact their chances with some of the things that they had breakdowns with defense that Butler probably would have been able to help? I don't doubt that. Not in the slightest. But I also feel like there is something to be said about having some sort of structure and order. If he were to have gone that far and, you know, he said the magic words to the coaches in that emotional breakdown, I can't necessarily say that I disagree. That's where I'm trying to rationalize it, just because there's not too many things that you can't have some sort of rational tie that Belichick has done throughout his career.
Yeah, no doubt, Jordan. I think I thought that way very similar, or starting out right after the game. In my opinion, I know as a player, even if I knew my teammate was Malcolm Butler, of course, there's two sides to every story, and I, like you said, Belichick has proven his worth as far as making sound judgment on tough calls, and whether the whole story is out there or not at the time, he always acts in the best interest, or has shown to act in the best interest of the team in the quote unquote Patriot way.
Right.
But I don't know. In this instance, I just know if I'm a player for the Patriots right now, in my opinion, Malcolm Butler, if he was really having disciplinary issues, he should have sat for a half, and then he can come play the second half when we're getting our asses kicked, and I'm looking on the sideline and 21 is healthy, and I'm knowing we need help on defense, you know? So
no, hey, I agree with you there, you know, and I can't say that I am 100% on board with how he handled it and not play him at all. I'm just merely saying that from a coaching standpoint, if that's what happened and that is the reasoning behind it, I can at least see where it was coming from. Like I say, I don't know how much all along throughout the year was a build-up between those guys, and if it was just finally like a straw breaking the camel's back type of situation and a message had to be sent on who really was boss. I don't know the details to that. Who knows if we as the collective public ever will. I do agree that it was something that had a major impact on their chances of winning that football game.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think it's really easy to point to that as the single reason. I just think, at any point in that game, one stop is all it takes, because they still with all that build up from him not playing, and I mean, apparently it was the highest offensive output in the history of the NFL, playoff and regular season. So there was no defense being played.
None. Absolutely none. You know, how do you think that that impacts, just kind of sidebar real quick, what do you think that the Lions think about their hire of Matt Patricia based on that?
it definitely doesn't bode well. But, you know, it's a guy like that that's had sustained success
right.
has, you know, it's, I think they're going to look at his body of work before taking into consideration one game. But, I mean, it's also not a good sign because you look at other Patriot coaches who've gone on to leave the organization as assistants and take head jobs. They generally have not been the most successful.
Nope. I think he's going to fall flat on his face. I think that his fat ass is going to roll right in his hoodie with his beard and his stupid backwards hat as a head coach if he tries to wear it like that.
Probably so, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is if you're 100% spot on that way, nobody really from his coaching tree has had a prolonged level of success at the head coaching level. Bill O'Brien, you know, he's hanging on still down there in Houston. And if, you know, if Deshaun Watson stays healthy, then, hey, O'Brien might be the guy that kind of changes that narrative there on that side of things. But if you look through the history of some of the guys from his coaching tree, your Romeo Crennels, your Charlie Weisses of the world, Josh McDaniels in his first couple of stints out there, you know, Army, that's kind of what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to find out one more this year, too. Not only in Patricia, but Mike Vrabel taking over in Tennessee.
How crazy is that? You know? Going from being a position coach, making the big jump. You don't see that too often.
Yeah, no doubt. But, I mean, I think that's part of the stigma that the Patriot way carries with it. I mean, regardless of the success that other guys have had, they come from a winning organization, and other teams are willing to pay for that to try to bring that to their place.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and especially with the NFL being as, you know, as notorious for being a copycat league as it is, if they see a, you know, a system or a particular organization that's starting to have some success, or in general, sometimes it could be a team wins it one year and everybody else is trying to replicate what those other teams have done. I still think that our hiring of Josh McDaniels, as young and immature as he was at that time, was a direct copycat reflection of what Pittsburgh was able to accomplish with Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin had just won the Super Bowl the year previously as a very young head coach with the Steelers against the Arizona Cardinals. I think that that's kind of where that fell in. It's a copycat league. People want to bring in that Patriots culture of success, but that's where I think that it just kind of stacks onto the hoodie's credit. He's the one who runs that show. He is the alpha. Guys leave, things stay the same for him. They bring in new offensive coordinators, new defensive coordinators, special teams guys, position coaches. For the last 17 years, they have been the epitome of success within the NFL.
Well, and I think that goes to why, you know, successful teams are built on the people and who's a part of the organization, just like anything else, I think, you know? And with Bill Belichick, that's part of the issue I think they're having this year, is why he's, in my opinion, overexerting power on Malcolm Butler, because they did it to him in the offseason, too. Right. And why there are reports and stories all year long about Brady and Belichick and Kraft fighting for power now. And so I think he has had the keys to the car for 15, 20 years now, or however long it's been. And now, you know, Kraft is giving them to Tom Brady, is how it seems. And so I think that's also why it's very likely that he ends up retiring at the, you know, sooner than later, at least.
Right. You know, and I could see it being a lot sooner rather than later. I could see it potentially being this offseason with the way that I, you know, with the way that everything has kind of transpired for them through the season. He has basically gotten rid of any sort of succession plan that the Patriots had in place. He sent off Jimmy G, who Jimmy G just broke the bank, baby. Jimmy G just absolutely cashed in out there in San Francisco. He set the bar. Kirk Cousins should be sending a thank you card, you know, a, you know, whatever gift basket you want to type, you know, you want to call it, to Jimmy G, because Kirk Cousins is about to get paid based off of what Jimmy G got. Jimmy G has, I believe, 7 career starts, and he's going to be getting, I believe, it came down to $27.5 million over the course of the next 5 years. If Jimmy G in 7 starts is getting $27.5 million, then Kirk Cousins is easily getting $30 million.
Yeah, John Elway can't be happy. The price just went way up on Kirk.
Big time. And the other guy that you thought you might kind of have an outside chance at getting a decent deal on just went and fucked around and won Super Bowl MVP on you. He was the other guy who, in my opinion, was a better choice that you could have picked in the draft in which you took Brock Osweiler in the second round. You could have taken either Nick Foles, Russell Wilson, or Kirk Cousins with that number 2 pick. Yet you chose Brock the Cock.
Yeah, I think that's where the pick of Brock, I think, is where the indictment of John Elway as a GM, where those kind of whispers started to grow.
Yeah, you know, I think that it was more so for John. I still always hold true. I think that was a pick from the heart. You know, his son, Jack, went to ASU, was there at the same time with Brock, and was, you know, was allegedly friends with him. I don't know the story. I don't know the guys personally to know, you know, how close of friends they were or not. But that is definitely a connection that is worth noting, you know, for him to have, you know, basically put Brock at the top of the board above other qualified candidates. There is a very definite bias that I think can be drawn from that situation.
For sure. But to that, I just say, bring on Baker.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. I've been on record myself stating that I hope that we don't take a quarterback at 5. But, you know, that's something that we're planning on wrapping up with. Just, you know, real quick to kind of transition away from the Super Bowl. Congratulations, Philadelphia Eagles. It was something that's been, you know, long overdue for the city. Your people of the city turned that thing into Rampage World Tour like it was the video game back on N64 in 1990s. You absolutely tore that place down. You know, I don't know if you got to see any of the videos. Barstool is great. Barstool had people on the streets that entire night documenting what was going on. It was like the Purge 2018.
It was, man. It was wild. I had to check Twitter, and I had a good laugh when I saw the Crisco cops going out greasing up poles to keep people from climbing on them, but there's no way that was going to work.
Yeah, well, actually, they did Crisco or cooking oil for the championship round, but they had to upgrade it to motor oil this last time. Because they said that you know, people still were able to climb with the cooking oil, so they had to upgrade it this time. But there were people that climbed up on the awning for the Ritz-Carlton. They completely collapsed the canopy there. They busted the window out of Macy's right downtown. There was a Toyota Prius that got flipped. There were traffic lights that were getting pulled down. It was absolute mayhem and pandemonium through the streets. That was a place that they had trash trucks lined around kind of a perimeter downtown. I don't know if Ross, if you've ever watched the show The Wire, but they said this on Barstool and it made me think about it, and it was almost, you know, spot on and accurate. It was like Hamsterdam in there.
Yep, yep.
You know, it was like was basically, you know, it was all hell breaking loose and all was legal within that perimeter. So it was it would have been a crazy atmosphere to have been at, you know, if you were in that Philly area that night. Philly definitely has never been short on the soft side of things, let's call it.
Yeah, no, they haven't. But I mean, to me, act like you've been there.
Oh, I agree. You know, I think that there's no excuse to destroy your city, literally destroy your city because you won. That's, to me, that's stupid. Why are you breaking out the windows of businesses and doing that sort of dumb stuff? I get partying and, you know, raging through that. That's cool. Even, you know, maybe a little bit of riot here and there. You know, I'm not opposed to it. I like to party. Who doesn't?
Yeah, but, of course.
Within reason, you know, you're not, like I say, you're not turning this into Rampage World Tour. I actually think they're making a movie based off of that coming up. I think maybe The Rock's in it, which is probably fitting. Rock's in everything anymore these days that has anything action-related. Somehow Jumanji turned from a Robin Williams movie into a video game with a Rock just kicking ass somehow.
Yeah, that's probably exactly why I never watched it. But you got to consider this coming from a Spurs fan, man. You know I'm from San Antonio, so we've won a couple now, and so I'm just, yeah. I guess maybe I'm just a little bit biased myself and used to the championship parade.
Oh, yeah, you know, you're about the fundamentals, you know, all about the process there. You know, something that's not necessarily the process, but will transition into it. It's always an icon, always a big draw for many people every single year. I think that this year's Super Bowl halftime show was one of the better ones in a long time. You know, JT, Justin Timberlake, he was smooth out there. I'm usually not the biggest, you know, biggest spectacle person for the halftime show. That's usually when, you know, that's I'm stuffing my face, grabbing another beard, you know, doing something of that nature, not really paying attention to the halftime show. I really don't care. The only one that I wanted to watch, I didn't. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers because the Broncos were sadly getting just packed. But we'll leave that for another day. Justin Timberlake was absolutely killer, in my opinion. You know, what did you think from that?
Yeah, man, he gives white guys hope. It was a cool show, man. I was a little disappointed that Janet Jackson didn't show, but
yeah, you know, the only thing missing from the show was a titty.
Exactly. But it was, I think he did a good job, man. I thought he killed it. But again, you know, what do I know about music?
Oh, exactly. And I'm the same way. I don't have a music background or anything like that. But just it just seemed everything just hit after hit was very seamless. Didn't really have any sort of Coldplay moments. God, that was awful.
No kidding, yeah.
Yeah, that was, you know, I mean, granted, I sat through that because that was my Broncos winning that time. But that was bad.
It's not always going to be perfect, but I guess it's a little bit more entertaining, though, when it goes that way sometimes.
Yeah, you know, sometimes. I love the Prince tribute, you know, especially when they did the cutaway and they had the lights all around the stadium through that area in Minneapolis, just kind of showing that Prince logo lit up. And then, maybe even better than that, someone on the internet had a meme that went out viral that instead of Prince on the big draw, it was the Dave Chappelle rendition of Prince that was photoshopped into the photo with the blouses pose. God, that was killer. I was sitting there laughing so hard when I saw that. Whoever did that, you are an internet god. Thank you very much.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Prince tribute was my favorite part.
Yeah, that was nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
So real quick, I want to take a couple of seconds just to shout out a local partner up here in the Northern Colorado area. Like to shout out Carlson Property Solutions for any of your handyman, home repair, or restoration and renovation needs. Give Brian and Becca a call at 970-775-4274, or you can look them up online at carlsonpropertysolutions.com. That's 970-775-4274. Or CarlsonPropertySolutions.com. I also want to give a shout out to Keith Lynch of Fort Collins for being selected as the first winner of our Fan Friday giveaway. Congratulations, Keith. Also, everybody out there listening, keep your suggestions coming in to keep yourself in line for those giveaways for our Fan Fridays. February 9th, we'll be announcing the very next winner as far as that goes. So thank you very much for everybody that's participated. We appreciate all of your feedback here at Comments from the Peanut Gallery. Where to follow us? You can follow us online at galleriesofpeanuts.com. Also look us up on Facebook at Peanut Sports. You can find us on Instagram, Comments from the Peanut Gallery, and search us on Twitter at Peanut Podcast. Ross, is there any place that, you know, you'd like for people to follow you or kind of keeping yourself private?
Nah, it's been a while since I've been on social media. I appreciate it, though.
Alrighty, man. You know, just figure that I would give you the opportunity to throw in any sort of plugs or anybody that you wanted to shout out on that side of things. Coming away from the break on that, let's talk about the NBA trade deadline. That was today. There was a lot of shakeup there. You know, there was so much that we can't go into all of the fine details. But let's just kind of talk about the Cavs. The Cavs have completely overhauled their roster within one single day. What do you think about that? You're a big basketball fan.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's what they've grown to do the past couple of years. LeBron doesn't like the way things are going. And then he demands some action and they make some trades and try to get into the playoffs and make a run. And, you know, that's been the hot story this year. And I think they probably will get away with it after overhauling their entire roster today like they did.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely insane. You know, I'll just kind of quickly read off. There was an amazing graphic that ESPN was able to put together that showed exactly, you know, what they sent away as well as what they received. They were willing dealing today at the deadline, ladies and gentlemen. They sent away Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Iman Shumpert, Jay Crowder, Channing Frye, the 2018 first rounder, as well as the 2020 Miami second rounder, in which they obtained from a trade. They were able to bring in, so now suiting up in a Cavaliers uniform, Larry Nance Jr. from the University of Wyoming, going to Cleveland, Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, Rodney Hood, and then that second rounder that we just mentioned that they traded away.
Did they sign George Hill?
They do have George Hill right now.
Oh, wow. That's a good sign, man. That's what I'm saying. Here they go. They're going to be
and like I said, good, you know, in the playoffs. Like, that's at least the last that I've seen, Ross. So things may have changed as many moves as they've been making and as many things were shaken up in the NBA today. This was at the last, this is according to ESPN at the deadline.
Okay, okay.
So I would venture to say that as of right now, he's a Cav. You know, you were kind of talking about it earlier, saying about how you think that benefits them going into this playoff run. It's obviously, you know, it's a big topic, being that King James' legacy is obviously something that is a public focus for the basketball fans that are out there. Where, you know, you mentioned this being something to bolster their playoff chances. How?
Well, I mean, it wasn't working. And the bottom line is everyone talks about LeBron was pouting, and I think it was maybe visible, but it just, you know, he wasn't happy, and he's the king of Cleveland, he's LeBron James, and he gets what he wants there. And they definitely needed some change and some turnaround. But I think in the big picture, you look at it, and it really opens up him, you know, him moving to LA next year, and I think that's very obvious by the pieces that moved, and it opened up some cap space for LA, and you know, at the end of the day, I think that's really the bigger motive on both ends.
You know, I would definitely agree that it was kind of a shake each other's hands, scratch each other's backs type of deal. Because if you look at the way that the math kind of breaks down and what the Lakers were able to part ways with and open up the books for what could potentially be, you know, the LeBron James sweepstakes of this 2018 offseason, I think that it opened up the opportunity for not just LeBron's max contract, but that opened enough room on the books for a second max contract, in which you may see one Paul George making his way from a very disgruntled Oklahoma City. I think that that's a high likelihood of the move. What do you think?
Well, Magic Johnson said he wants them to be Showtime again, so I think that's very likely. I think you're right on.
What if, you know, just to kind of throw this out there, because it's going to come up at some point, if you are Magic Johnson and the Lakers, and LeBron James says, I want to be a Laker, but my asking price is, you got to trade Lonzo Ball, because I don't want to deal with LeVar Ball.
Probably so. Get rid of him.
Do you trade him?
I would, in a heartbeat.
I say the same exact thing. And I've told people that. You know, I've ran with this, talking about that, since it was, you know, basically been brought up through, you know, the last few weeks. If you are LA, how do you not do that? How do you not? You know, LeBron really isn't showing a whole ton of signs of slowing down. Granted, he's not at the peak or prime that he may have once been even just a couple of years ago, but he is still at that very, you know, elite top end level at this point in his career, just like you see from, you know, some of those older quarterbacks in the league, your Brady's, your Breeze, your Rivers, your Roethlisberger's, all those sorts of guys. They're going to perform at a very high level just based off of being a great veteran, but they may not be what the, you know, Tom Brady right now at 40 isn't what he was in 2007 when he lit up the record books with Randy Moss.
Right.
That's that sort of example. That's, I guess, what I'm trying to communicate.
For sure, yeah. And the bottom line, though, is LeBron's not slowing down. His talent's going nowhere anytime soon.
You know, it's incredible to me that he's never really had any sort of major injury throughout his career. You know, I'm knocking on wood right now for for the King, but you know, like I say, it's incredible that he's had the tenure in the NBA that he's had without having anything significant that's kept him sidelined for any sort of sustained period of time, or that's been something to linger. You know, whether it be a knee to an ankle to an Achilles to shoulders, pinkies, whatever that you've seen from some of the greats in history. Jordan had the foot that kept him out the entire year almost. Kobe had the Achilles along with many other things. There's been guys that have had those, you know, those big bumps and bruises that have kept him out. But LeBron's just almost seemed immune to it. He's kind of like the Incredible Hulk of the league.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why he's broken so many records and been the first one, you know, time-wise, calendar-wise, to do a lot of what he's done. And I mean, and that's like why I said, you know, I don't. It's hard to see him slowing down anytime soon.
And yeah, you know, it's hard to see that. And you know, it's hard not to put him up there as at this point a clear cut number two. But I had a problem with his posting of his congratulations to himself for the 30,000 points. You posted that before you even did it. Come on, man. Like, you know, and I've grown on LeBron. I liked LeBron when he first came out and into the league. And then I really grew sour on him when he went through the whole decision phase, just because I'm more so of the adage, you don't make yourself bigger than the team or bigger than the game. And that's what he did by having the decision. It's not the fact that he left. It's how he left. And just, you know, his whole immaturity, you know, kind of bad guy act that he tried to run with for a little bit. But he's turned around on me. He's turned the corner character-wise, in my opinion. But there's things like that that's just like, LeBron, come on, man. You're almost Tom Brady-esque in that sense, that you're not helping your own cause in terms of likability or helping you be favored by the general public. There's a lot of people that love you, but you are one of, unfortunately, the most polarizing sports figures that I feel like has came about in this generation.
Yeah, and I think the way, as a former athlete, not anywhere near the caliber of him, but you know, you look at it, and I think he just does that kind of stuff for fun now. It's so redundant to him, and it's such a routine practice that he knows anything he does, whether his actions or his words, it's gonna become a big story. It's gonna be talked about.
Right.
So I think, you know, being under that microscope 24/7, there's gonna be times where he's slipped up, and I think he's probably to the point where he is not worried about those slip-ups anymore. He's going to say what's on his mind and just let it run with it, and let the media run with it, and let it be what it'll be. And I don't think he's going to lose much sleep over it at this point.
No, and you know, I think you're right there. My whole, you know, when I saw him make the post prematurely, I was like, I hope that they shut you down. I hope they hold you to 6 points tonight and you have to retract that stupid post. Like, but maybe that's just me, and I'm just bitter, you know. I'm the guy who looks for the wry side of things, or to talk a little shit or stir it up. Maybe that's just me.
I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Especially, you know, in relation to LeBron, you know, probably a little bit on that side of things, just because I'm such a Jordan fan on that side of things, and no matter what LeBron does, he will never cross Jordan in my eyes.
Well, that makes two of us.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just let's kind of tie our transition away from the NBA. What did you see from the quarterbacks in this Senior Bowl, or have you seen so far from the guys that are coming out? And what maybe, being that we're in Colorado, no disrespect to your fandom to New England, and being that we have a top five pick, who do you take at five? Give me a little bit of that.
Well, you know, that's a loaded question, of course, but it depends on what they do. If they go after Kirk Cousins, of course, but you know, if they don't sign Kirk Cousins, they've got to take a quarterback, and I think it should be Josh Allen. I know people have an issue with him, but
oh my God,
here we go. Listen, I'm telling you, he needs reps, man. That's all it is. He played in a pro style offense. He's not Brock Osweiler, he's not Baker Mayfield, who was never under center. You know, he's a big athletic guy with a big arm, and the more he plays, the better he's going to get, I believe.
Man, he played in the Pillow Fight Conference. Like, you know, and I'm a huge Mountain West fan. I'm a CSU Ram myself. You know, I love the Rams. Don't get me wrong. I like the Mountain West. I'm not trying to disrespect them, but I know that I am, and I know it's going to come off that way. But if you just get down to brass tacks about it, it's a pillow fight conference in terms of what you're looking at with defenses and those sorts of things in relation to what, in my opinion, you're evaluating it for an NFL quarterback. To me, I don't know. Maybe that's just my take, and I'm just a fan. I'm an outside looking in type of guy. You've been there and done that through the process. You're a lot more, you know, in tune with how all of that goes. You know, help me out here.
Well, yeah, man, take it easy. You don't have to defer to me on it, but it's you're right though. I mean, it makes a difference, I think. But you know, if guys can play ball, you know, football is football when you get to that level. And if you're ready and you can play, I mean, you'll rise to the top and you'll make the team. And I think, you know, it's a different position, but. A couple of examples, you know, guys that hit close to home, look at Ryan Jensen.
Right.
You know, and so it doesn't necessarily matter, you know, the competition you play for the most part. I mean, you know, there's so many variables that go into it, and those things do count. But, you know, it's about the makeup of the player at the end of the day.
And I would agree with that, you know, and I'm not wanting to, you know, have a complete broad stroke knock of the small school type of guy or, you know, a non-Power 5 conference type of guy. And I know it sounds like it's the exact opposite and sounds exactly like what I'm doing. Let me preface this also by saying that I have a strong bias against Wyoming, being that that's our rival.
Of course.
So I don't see it with Josh Allen being at that caliber of a number five type of pick. I just don't see it being that high. Do I think that he can have a good chance at being a quality NFL quarterback? Yes, I do. I think that he has all of those traits that you spoke of. I just don't think that it's worth taking him that high. That's my opinion. I don't think that any of these quarterbacks are one that are worth taking at five. That's my take. I don't think that any of these guys are ready for that spot. That's why you have to go after a free agent.
You know, I agree. I think, in my opinion, if I were the Broncos, if I were John Elway, I'd go after Kirk Cousins first. But, you know, the good thing is, with the draft, here's what's going to happen. Because Cleveland feels like they missed out on Carson Wentz last year. Who's the Carson Wentz of this year? Josh Allen. And so I don't think Josh Allen's going to fall to Denver unless they trade up, and I don't think they will. So if they don't go after Kirk and Josh Allen's gone, bring on Baker.
You know, if it is going to be one of the quarterbacks, I would not be absolutely disappointed with Baker. Baker still has a lot to show to me on that side of things, to, you know, for me to really buy in for him being a franchise level quarterback. That's where I feel like you have to hold that guy in that regard right away, immediately, if you're taking him with a marquee pick. That's, like I say, that's my thought on that pick for a quarterback right there. I don't think that just because you have that pick there that you should absolutely take a quarterback if there's not a quarterback that is worthy of taking in that spot. I think that if you have a spot that is that high and you have a chance to get a guy from Notre Dame, the offensive guard, Quentin Nelson, if you can get a guy like Quentin Nelson, guards aren't sexy. I get that. But as I started off the episode by saying, you need help on the offensive line more than anything. You pick up Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame, you have a guy who's going to be there for 10 to 15 years, going to give you multiple All-Pro and Pro Bowl performances. This guy is projected by all of the scouts, all the analysts out there, to be the one surefire, cannot-miss pick of this draft. He's not going to get taken with one of those first couple of picks. But if he is there at five, for me, it's hard not to justify taking someone who is not only best player available, but something that fits one of your biggest needs as an organization. You took, with your number one pick last year, an offensive tackle. You take it this pick as an offensive guard. You have a chance also this offseason of bringing in Nate Solder, who's been on record stating that he wants to come back to Colorado. You put some of these pieces in motion, you maybe can wear some other deficiencies at offense because you have time to make other things happen. You know, I think that we could have been a little bit more competitive. Maybe, definitely not at the Super Bowl championship level, but we'd have been more competitive with the three that we had this year had they not been under so much duress the entire time.
100%. I mean, a run game and a good offensive line are a quarterback's best friend. And I felt a little bit bad for Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch and Brock Osweiler because even though all three of those guys are probably not Pro Bowl starter level players on a lot of NFL teams, I mean, the whole situation with the offense was compounded this year with lack of depth on the O-line and in the backfield with them. So I think you're spot on. If they can get an O-line and shore up other positions with those high picks, go for it. But then that really, they have to sign a quarterback.
Right, and I'm with that, you know, and that's where I think that the guy that he's not really getting a whole lot of talk right now, but will continue to climb on people's boards is Mason Rudolph out of Oklahoma State. I think that there's a guy like a Mason Rudolph out of Oklahoma State that you have a chance at getting maybe with a second or a third round pick. So you're not only addressing a young quarterback need, but you're also taking that, like I say, the best player available in the entire draft in Quentin Nelson at offensive guard coming out of Notre Dame. You shore up that need. You have some other flexibility with spots, you know, depending on what you're able to bring in with free agency. This may all be a moot point once free agency comes around too, because who knows what they're going to bring in? You know, who knows what moves John Elway is going to make to bring free agents and guys in trades and things of that nature. Like I say, I think that if you bring in Quentin Nelson on the offensive line, you draft a quarterback with one of those, you know, one of those later picks. I'm interested in seeing the development of Lamar Jackson. I know that there's been a you know, a big upswing as far as his progression or the thought that scouts have had within the last few weeks of him. There's been a lot of reports from people working at him at his workout facility that he's made leaps and bounds, starting to go from NFL type sets, just running in practice and, you know, those sorts of sets and workouts. He unfortunately gets the narrative of, you know, oh, is he just an athlete or is he a, you know, is he a good quarterback? With all the physical skills that he has, you know, Ross, make me, you know, help me out here. Are you interested in what he might be able to bring to the table at an NFL level? Or do you think that he's more so, you know, another cautionary tale of that phenomenal athlete, collegiate quarterback?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, he looks like a more athletic Vince Young, as scary as that sounds, you know. But it's, you don't want to knock a guy that has had the success that he's had, but, you know, it's also not often translated to the NFL.
Right.
And so he's definitely worthy of a shot, and it's like anything. It's if he can get into a system with a coach that is, you know, going to be behind him and believe in him and not get fired in a year, then he'll have a shot for sure. And I think he needs to play quarterback wherever he goes, you know. Mm-hmm. I hate that when coaches and teams, you know, just because a guy's a good athlete, switches position and don't give him a chance, you know. If he's your best athlete or best player, let him spin, man.
Right, and I agree, you know. I think that that's also, should I say, within reason. I think that as a player, you definitely can reserve your right to play your position if you want to. But it, you know, if there's a team out there, you know, like a, let's just say, you know, running back a few years, like a Colin Klein type of situation out of K-State. Colin Klein was never going to have a chance to be an NFL quarterback long term. Let's just call it for what it is. But that dude was such a phenomenal athlete. I have it on good record from sources around here in the northern Colorado area where he's native to, that he had the opportunity to switch positions but declined that opportunity because he if he wasn't able to do it as a quarterback, you know, was ready to hang it up at peace with his career. The way that a lot of quarterbacks are, that, you know, Tim Tebow being one of them. Tim Tebow, in my opinion, is still in the NFL if he decided to change positions. The Patriots asked him to take and assume a different role, like an H-back Aaron Hernandez-esque role, but he declined.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard part about the position is you've got to have that blind confidence sometimes to when you're playing that position. That's just what it takes when people are booing or yelling at you after an interception, and you know your coach is in your ear. You've got to go back out and do it again, and that, you know, that's the oldest cliche in the game, but it's true. And you know, I think that's what prevented some of those guys from making that change, and you know, holding on to that pride. But again, you know, a guy like Lamar Jackson, you know, it's got to be a backup plan as a position switch. And who knows when he'll go, you know, maybe second, third round. Hopefully not too late. I mean, he deserves this shot, and I think he's proven himself as a quarterback.
You know, I definitely think that he deserves to have a shot as a quarterback. And, you know, if he for some reason is unable to find success or be able to stick on there, I can definitely see him having some Terrell Pryor type of success, making that position change and, you know, making the transition to a receiver or something like that, because he really is that good of an athlete when he has the football in his hands. Put him in space and that guy is incredible with the football.
Yeah, no doubt.
So it would be a shame to see that wasted if it's just simply because he can't play quarterback in the NFL.
Right. Well, let's not go throwing him under the Terrell Pryor bus yet, but I think hopefully if he does make a switch, it'll be a little bit more
just
successful.
Just kind of make any comparison on that side. Someone who made it to the league, was an established quarterback, and then you know had to pursue another avenue, but was athletic enough to sustain.
Yeah, of course.
That's more so. You know, Terrell Pryor's had a lot of other things in his past that I don't want to put that evil on Lamar Jackson, but you know, let's just. While I have you here, because you're definitely an expert on the subject, what do you think of some of the other quarterbacks? You know, I think that a guy like Josh Rosen, who a lot of scouts seem to be high on, I think that Josh Rosen is Jay Cutler 2.0.
You know, I don't know about Jay Cutler. I think Josh Rosen loves and cares about football, but I'm not high on him, you know, I'm not so high on him either. I think, he's very polished, and he's, he's had a great career, put up great numbers. But it's not really a hot take, but it's kind of what the consensus has been on him lately is that he doesn't love football, and that's kind of a harsh indictment. But you know, I think he'll have a fine career, but you know, I wouldn't be sold on him as a very high pick. But who knows? I hope he goes to the Giants.
You know, and that's what's crazy to me is that there's so many of these mock drafts and projections where he's one of these top quarterbacks that are being taken. A lot of these guys like Mayock and McShay, Kuiper, all of them, they're having like four quarterbacks taken in the top 10. I don't think that any of these guys are top 10 caliber quarterbacks, in my opinion.
Well, you know, he's too good to not draft, and maybe not in the, you know, to not let get out of the first round.
I see a big issue with his accuracy, though. That's where I find the biggest issue with Rosen, and the fact that dude's legs are twigs. You bring James Harrison, and you let that Debo Silverback gorilla come through and just absolutely smash you. That is Colt McCoy all over again. Colt McCoy has never recovered since that time when James Harrison put the smack down on him when he was in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean... But then again, it goes back to, you know, that's what you pay the big guys for, to protect them and keep them from going down like that. So, I mean, you know, I think the talent is there. And in my opinion, I think he's probably a little bit lower than the other guys. But that could, you know, just be some negative momentum going against him, because that's been kind of the common story going into the draft and when he's been compared to these other guys.
That's understandable. You know, what about his crosstown counterpart in Darnold?
You know, that's one of the guys I have in my opinion ahead of Rosen is Darnold. I think he's a guy that he's really unshakable. Not that Rosen isn't, but he's a gamer. You know, he is a guy that seems to really love the game, and he puts it on the line. And when you look at what SC asked him to do this year, it was all on his shoulders. And whether they won or lost, it was on him, you know, because he needed to make plays for him. It was kind of a down year, I guess you could say, as weird as that is for SC.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that you're definitely hitting on some very valid points there for SC. My accuracy, or my question with him again, is accuracy. I watched, you know, just take for example, for all of you Colorado listeners out there and you CU Buff fans, if you take a look back at the game film from the CU game, he missed some pretty, you know, some pretty easy throws, in my opinion. Like I say, I'm just a fan. Who am I to know what's an easy throw and what's not? But from, you know, the general look of watching the game, there were some can't-miss throws for an NFL or a, you know, a top 10 NFL franchise type quarterback that I just didn't see from him. And yes, I get it, he's young. But are you willing to put somebody that is that young and still that green out there and baptism by fire, throw him to the wolves right away if you're not putting him behind a vet for a couple of years? Because keep it in mind and make it be noted that he is a young quarterback coming into this draft, so he is nowhere near even just the physical progression of what some of these other guys in the draft are. That may, you know, that may make an impact.
Yeah, no doubt it will. I think if, speaking of what you're saying, is if you're in a position like those teams drafting 1 through 5 or in the top 10 and you need a quarterback, I think you're in trouble and you got bigger issues anyways, I think, for the most part. But if you take a guy like him, I think you have to start him right away, you just don't have a choice but to live with those growing pains. And so, you know, that's why teams will bring in a vet and have somebody that can kind of groom him. But, you know, with the accuracy issues, I think, again, like I said, for him to win games at USC this year, he had to make plays. And he had that Brett Favre gunslinger mentality where he had to fit balls in tight windows and kind of make things happen. And so for him to have higher interception rate, I think that's going to come with that territory. But they do raise red flags for sure. But I still think, you know, he's legit. I think he's got a very good head on his shoulders. And again, with the interceptions and taking care of the football, you know, it's maybe a low-hanging fruit. But, I mean, who has the most interceptions in NFL history?
You're right. No.
And he's got a golden jacket.
Hey, I get you there. I get you. I'm not trying to deny anything on that side. I just, like I say, I am not completely sold on any of the quarterbacks that are right there to be taken at 5 for me. And like I say, I'm trying to look out for the long-term success of the Broncos or where I see that they could go. And looking at, you know, if there isn't a guy that is that much of a can't-miss pick, if it's just another great offensive line prospect, then maybe I don't think the same. But Quentin Nelson, he's been compared to everybody, you know, to like a Logan Mankins. Well, if he's even 75% of what Logan Mankins is, you've got yourself one hell of a football player. And I will take that 10 times out of 10. Offensive line is something that you absolutely need. We have not been able to run the football for years. We have had a very shoddy performance in the passing game, and our third down efficiency has been abysmal. Shore up your offensive line, you start to see measurable changes within those offensive efficiency, you know, places.
For sure. And, you know, the case study for that is Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
People were so frustrated with them for years because they were going tackle, guard, center year after year in the first round.
Yep.
And it's paid off for them.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's, you read between the lines, Ross, of what I've been getting at this entire time for what you could potentially get to if you're the Broncos. That would be then having two, you know, back-to-back first-round picks. Dallas has 4, you know, who's counting, whatever. But, like I say, I think that that's where it all starts. We got to shore up the offensive line first before anything else is going to see a very measurable turnaround. But, you know, we're coming up on wrapping this up. Is there any kind of final thoughts or anything that you'd like to add in and share at the moment?
Yeah. You know, I think awesome being back in Colorado, man. Thanks for having me up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely,
man. Happy to be on the pod today, man, and really looking forward to seeing this thing take off.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I'm, like I say, I'm trying to promote as many good stories, you know, Colorado people as we can. I will be glad to, you know, have you on the show for future episodes. Thank you very much for making the drive up here to Fort Collins tonight to record. It's been a great opportunity to pick your brain about knowing some of the higher level stuff from the quarterback point of view. It's definitely greatly appreciated, and you know, it enhances my knowledge for the game. And I'm always open to learning everything that I can. I want to be as much of a sponge to it as I possibly can be. Learning from someone like you has definitely been a great opportunity having these conversations here. Like I say, we're comments from the Peanut Gallery. No topic is safe. You can follow us at galleriesofpeanuts.com. Look us up on Facebook at Peanut Sports. Look us up on Instagram, comments from the Peanut Gallery. Find us on Twitter at Peanut Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Kurtz, a.k.a. Kurtz EF, signing out. Baller, shot caller, 20 and play.